Oh, hey there, listeners and juicers. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that if you have fallen in love with the Draw Your Dice podcast and want to help put some new fruit on the table, but don't feel comfortable making a monthly commitment, well, you can support the show via the Acast supporter feature. No gift too large, nor too small. Just click on the link in the show description and know that I am sending you the strongest hug when you do so.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My name is Jeremy Gage, and welcome to the Draw Your Dice podcast. This is an educational show involving all things tabletop role-playing industry. Listen alongside me as we hear from creators, entrepreneurs, and supporters about their personal best practices, principles, and philosophies. I encourage anyone from the budding game designer to a seasoned publisher and everyone in between to sit down with us and enjoy today's episode. Everyone, thank you for coming back to the Draw Your Dice podcast. My name is Jeremy Gage, as you heard in the intro, but as always, the show is never about me, except for that one time. But today, it is about a return, another return guest, another DYD alumni. Let's welcome back to the show, Aaron Lim.
Hi, hello. It's nice to be back.
Stretching all the way from across the globe, it's goddammit 2 a.m. there. You madman, but I'm happy to have you. Aaron chose the time. I didn't make Aaron interview at 2 a.m.
No, I'm a night owl, so this works for me.
You know, in addition, we have an episode earlier in the series where Aaron goes into how he got started in game design, mm-hmm. and, you know, exploring hegemony.
Yeah.
There we go. Got it. Very cool episode. I highly recommend if you want to learn a little bit more about Aaron intimately, please go listen to that episode. But since I have one of those already, we're not going to do that here today. But as a warm up for the viewers, Aaron, you know, what have you been playing lately? What have you been enjoying or filling your life with games wise?
Yeah. I've been playing a long running campaign of Beam Saber. So it's quite, I didn't realize how long we've been playing until like I had a look the other day. We started playing in May of 2020. So it's been more than 2 years. And yeah, Beam Saber, I think by the time this comes out, would have been released already, like the full version 1.0. That's a forged in the dark game about like being mech pilots in a war. And me and my friends, we're mecha fans of like different types, right? Like, like I'm more of a Gundam guy. One of my friends who's playing is introducing a Macross character. So they're trying to like turn everything into a concert and bring music into everything. That's really fun. And then there's someone who's like a bit more on like the Battletech, like more real robot kind of like side. So it's been really fun. I've been really enjoying just like having a long running campaign. And then we've also done like a few different like one shots. Like we played Echo one time and like delved into like the history of one of the cities. Mm-hmm. So Echo is a GM-less story game by Tunkai Po, where you play as kids finding a black box recorder for a mech that has a pilot's memories, and you're bringing it to their mech, like reuniting them to like you know, lay them to rest, which is a really cool game you should check out. And we played that like set in the past of our campaign. And so the three characters that we play are kind of NPCs now. Like they've grown up. They're like in their 60s and they're running a salvage shop somewhere. So that was like cool to have that. And I don't, this seems self-serving because like I'm also trying to plug like Spectres of Brocken since that's coming to Kickstarter soon.
Yeah, we're going to transition. Yeah.
we also did a one shot of Spectres, like one of the early playtests. It wasn't an early playtest. Spectres has been in development for quite a while now. But I meant to say it's in an earlier version than probably even the one that you encountered, Jeremy. So, when you played, were there words? Did we use words?
Yeah, okay. We had words.
So this was a version of the game that didn't have words yet. It sounds very weird when I say it didn't have words. We'll get to that, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did that for a one shot, and we had one of the characters from that game, actually several of the characters in that game, become major NPCs in our campaign. Because again, we set it in the past and kind of like explored like, hey, what was it like to be in this faction, right? Before the war started, and like some of the characters that were in there, and exploring that gave us like a really cool way to explore like the history of that faction and people from that faction. And like, yeah, they became key NPCs. And so like, that was quite a cool thing to be able to do, like weave into a campaign. I love doing that. Like, taking breaks in a long running campaign and like just playing other games that also tie into the campaign and like kind of like fleshes it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know I've talked to people about this before on the show and outside of the show, but there's this really cool, what I want to say. I think people who are tapped into the indie RPG scene, who are outside of like the main big players, even like Blades in the Dark stuff, something a little bit more microcosm than that. There's so many people who are using other lenses, as in other games, to explore different bits of their narrative on a totality scale. So like you mentioned, use one game to sort of explore the past and like flesh out your present a little bit more, right? Which is really fascinating. I hear a lot of people that use The Quiet Year to flesh out their worlds a little bit more. Beak, Feather, and Bone by Tyler Crumrine. Did I just forget Tyler's last name? Tyler, I'm sorry. Who did Beak, Feather, and Bone, which is a really cool, like, full city generator in a really cool way. But you can you can scale that out to be, like, a whole country. You can scale it back and make it, like, I don't know, just a faction of people. I don't know, it's really interesting that people are really open to splicing, not feeling tied to a single game and a single narrative. Like all of it is used to like broaden your mental model of your campaign, which I think is stellar. Absolutely stellar. Yeah.
I think I would push on that a little bit, right?
Sure.
In that, like, I think people who play like so-called like trad games like Pathfinder and D&D are also do that in their own way. But it's just because of the way that like those franchise games tend to like subsume everything into themselves, right? Because I consider like adventure modules to be kind of similar to like mini games, right? Because there's often like new mechanics that get introduced in, and you'll have to forgive me if like it's changed or like my experience has been mainly from like when I was playing the fourth edition, right? So when I never really ran anything straight out of the box except for like I think the Mines of Phandelver like intro red box thing, which was the first time we ever played D&D proper. So like we just ran that straight from the box, right? But like every time I've like taken bits of like other adventures, like I've always stolen like little sub mechanics from them and there's the different mechanics that you know change how certain things work or like add additional powers and stuff or like change like the skills challenges and or like introduce new ways to like do that kind of thing. So I think that is like there is exploration of that. It's just that you know when you're talking about like you know you consider them as modules, right, or adventures rather than like games, but often I feel like there's a lot of overlap between like the design of like story games or like like you know, those one-shot capable games and like adventure. Because this kind of ties into another thing that I've been playing. I've been playing the playtest or like the preview adventures from Reach of the Roach God, which mm-hmm. is a Kickstarter by the guys behind A Thousand Thousand Islands. And we've been playing a couple of adventures from that, and like both those adventures introduce like different ways to do, like they're very similar, and like they use a similar style of like encounter table and like NPC generation or like location generation or encounter generation, right? But there's always like cool twists in like the different ways that like troubles appear, or like interesting points of like conflict, or you know, points of interest that appear in the adventures, right? Mm-hmm. And like those, you could see them as like, oh, those are like kind of like weird little mini games on like it only happens in this adventure, right? This for example, like we are tracking the location of certain statues in one of the adventures, and it's like, oh, you would never do, there's like a bespoke mechanic for like what happens when those statues move around this place, right? And that bespoke kind of like design like makes me really think of like, oh yeah, like that's a game, right? Like that's a specific type of game. It still uses like the shape of like a traditional RPG, you know, with skills. It assumes you're rolling skills. It assumes there are spell books and spell scrolls and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. There's all the trappings of like a franchise game in there, but, or like a traditional kind of like fantasy RPG in there, but it has its own unique way of like introducing and like how the world moves, right? So I think there is a little bit of that in that kind of like gaming as well. We might not recognize it as such, mm-hmm. and potentially it is a point of friction. It is a point of like, oh man, I wish like more people realize that they are designing a game here rather than a module or an adventure. Yeah. There is a power in how things are named and thought of, right? Because like calling them modules and adventures gives the power to the franchise, mm-hmm. right? Like it makes them part of the bigger thing rather than like, hey, I made a thing here that works with this other thing. But like there's, you know, this is the kind of thing like where you're trying to I guess encourage people to like think of like game design more broadly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not remaking a full game, but yeah, I appreciate the pushback and I agree with everything you said. I think that for me, I think that is the bias, is that when you full sail turn to a whole redesign system to execute on something, I feel like that's what I was initially talking about. But you're right. Yes. There are there are little homebrew tricks that people are using in their D&D 5e games that help sort of recontextualize or reset the genre into a space that is not necessarily, like, there are tons of low tech, low magic, grim dark settings and insanity mechanics and madness and curses and stuff that people use in their settings to kind of change the game from heroic fantasy or epic mm-hmm. fantasy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's and totally sometimes- like a, go ahead.
Oh, I just sometimes you just do that for a few sessions, right? And then you go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And you could definitely, what's so interesting is that, like, now that we have teased it out a little bit, you could totally do that the before magic times, right? Mm. You could do your grimdark setting, have it be a piece of the history of your world, and then go right into like Faerun in the Sword Coast and be like, we have these things because of this. Like, our histories are now defined by what happened in that grim, dark setting. So even setting books are a really interesting way to sort of play out different points in your like world building as well. It's really cool. You could like merge certain settings together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I said it's just a slight push, because I do agree that like when you play in a different game, like it is different, right? Like you're the mechanic, mm-hmm. like, you know, stopping Beam Saber to then play like a game that just doesn't use dice entirely, like it's refreshing and mm-hmm. like brings up different parts of like yes. game playing, right? And like allows you to like see different parts of the game that you're playing in new ways. So mm-hmm. there's definitely like a useful distinction there, right? I'm not saying that like all like adventures are exactly the same, but like I think worth thinking of them in like worth thinking a little bit more about like how similar they are rather than how different they are, because there could be ways. Because I know that people do like bringing in like cool funky mechanics into like adventure modules and stuff like that, and like maybe, you know, like if you can think of that and like break free, like it's not that far from like just, hey, we're not doing a different adventure or module. It doesn't have to use like the core system in whatever game we were originally playing. Like we could just break and like use a completely different game and get a, you know, and get a different perspective on it, right? But yeah.
And additionally, mechs, you know, I'm loving seeing more and more, you know, I think we share a kindredness in that we grew up on the mecha genre, dude. Like I watched Macross, I watched Robotech, I watched almost all the Gundams up to 00, and some of the new stuff when it intrigues me animation wise, but
yeah.
Like I'm excited for that, what is it, Witch of Mercury that's about to come out or something like that. Yeah, first female protagonist, let's go, dude.
Yeah, finally.
Finally, 20 years, we made it. Longer. Although I wonder, did Macross have a... Anyways, but yeah, with your game, Spectres of Brock, which we'll talk about in a second, there's also Steal the Throne by Nick Bates, is that correct?
Nick Bates, I think. Stealing the Throne, yeah. Yeah, that's a really cool one. I managed to play that a month ago now. Maybe more, actually. Like, yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah. Echo, apparently, which is a different lens entirely, and Beam Saber, and
Lancer. Oh, yeah, I should mention Beam Saber by Austin Ramsey, which you can find on Itch.
So many mecha games have come out, like, in the last... Or mecha-inspired games have come out in the last four years. Well, I've been doing the podcast for two, so I'm going to say three in my experience, but I'm sure longer. But it's just so cool. I love get in the robot, dude. Get in the robot. Yeah. It's good. So with that, is that part of the reason why you were inspired to make Spectres of Brocken?
Yeah. So one of the big things that happened in the switch over to Itch, right? So I think it was like 2019, that was like there was a big sea change in like how people discuss and disseminate role-playing games online. Mm-hmm. Google Plus shut down and people were looking for a place to go, and Itch was suggested as a potential location to get to, and there was some take up. I know a lot of people who were so from my perspective, right? I'm not talking about this from an overall industry, it's just like my personal view of it. Like I knew a few people who were video game designers or like involved in like video games and also involved in like playing and making tabletop role-playing games, and I saw that they took to Itch very quickly, right? Because they already were familiar with the platform, but there wasn't a huge uptick in that until, so from my perspective, the big sea change was when the Emotional Mecha Jam happened in 2019. So that was like kind of like capitalizing on like one of the key features of Itch, right? Which is the ability to run game jams. And so that was one of the first big... I don't know how many people actually took part. I don't have it on me right now. But like in my mind, that was one of the big things that like got more people looking at Itch and like taking part, you know, making accounts and putting stuff up on Itch because you could take part in this game jam and then putting your games up there and then potentially also continuing to develop the game, because Spectres of Brocken started as a submission for that Emotional Mecha Jam back in 2019.
Fun quick aside, there were 177 entries for the Emotional Mecha Jam, and it was hosted by Takuma Okada and John Harness.
Yeah.
Hashtag sad mech jam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was like in my experience, right? Like that was a big change for like the adoption of Itch as a platform for tabletop RPGs, and also was the starter of for this game. This game started very differently to what it is now. So Spectres of Brocken was actually more about like the idea that like a mech is a representation like of or like an amplification of the pilot, right? Mm-hmm, like often, and basically this is just like anime design, right? Like you design the stand or the powers to reflect your character, your main character, you know? And it's a little bit more super robot than real robot, maybe.
Yeah.
But like the design of the mech like means something, right? Like the idea that like, hey, this hot-headed brash pilot would pilot like the mech that is super fast, only has armor on the front, has like 30 rocket boosters at the back, and you know, like has a massive like beam lance, right?
Yeah,
you know, direct to the point. So that's kind of where Spectres of Brocken started, and the name Spectres of Brocken, I don't know if did we talk about this?
No, not
know,
at
do
all.
Do you know where it comes from?
Mm-mm.
So there's a phenomenon called the Brocken Spectre, which is when your shadow gets cast on a cloud. If you're in a high place and your shadow gets cast on a cloud, it looks like a giant in the sky, whoa, which I first encountered from One Piece in the Skypiea arc.
Whoa.
Right, so I like that image, like of like, oh, like, you know, your shadow becomes like bigger than you, a giant, right? And that's that's the mech. The mech is the shadow.
Nice.
And so that's where, like, because one of the other names for Brocken Spectre, because the Brocken is a mountain in Germany, I believe. And so when they, and apparently that phenomenon happens often there, or was observed there and named there. So that's why they're called Brocken Spectres, or Spectres of the Brocken. So that's why the the name was that.
That's powerful energy. That's so many things in one title, which goes to show great naming conventions make for powerful writings. And so what do you do in Spectres of Brocken, Aaron?
So the current version of Spectres, like, so it ended up being a big twist in the game development, because the current pitch of Spectres of Brocken is you play this game where you make friends, and then years later, you have to fight them in a war in giant mechs. So that wasn't in the original pitch of Spectres of Brocken. That came about later on during development where I liked having this, you know, you want to get to know the character before you build up their mech, right? To reflect the character, right? So there needs to be, I realized there needed to be a bit more time spent just developing the character, right? Before we figure out, oh, what does their mech look like, and why does it suit their character so well? And so that gave me the idea of doing a time skip, which is something that I love a lot as a
love
plot
it.
Device.
Love a good
right?
time skip.
Yeah,
love
yeah.
It.
and like thinking of like mecha fiction that I love, there's two tropes that I really like, right? One is we used to be friends. Do you know Breakblade or Broken Blade?
Breakblade? Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I don't remember this. It's been a long time, but I know it generally.
Yeah, so I fell off Breakblade after a while, but like I remember the initial thing was like these four people used to be friends at like some academy, and then one of them became two of them like became the king and queen of the an empire. One dude became a farmer and then became a mech pilot, and then the other guy went off back to his home country, and his country ended up in a war with the others.
Watch it.
Right. Yeah. So they used to be friends, and then now like both of there's two of them who are now like ace mech pilots and have to fight each other, right?
Fight.
Yeah. And in fact, it's not just that they have to fight, but like I think Zess, like Hodor is the king of the other country, right? And like Zess has to like, it's not just about fighting the army. It's like my country is at war with yours, right? I'm gonna have to like take one of your, I can't remember, I believe that they then had to take one of or requested the other character to be the hostage.
Something that like sounds that. Sounds vaguely to me.
Yeah, so that I really loved from Breakblade, and the other trope that I love is just that when mech pilots meet outside of their mechs and they don't realize that they fought, right? Like when Amuro and Shah meet at a bar, or in Eureka 7 when Renton meets basically the Rumbarel of Eureka 7. And it's like, oh man, these two people are so cool. And then the next episode, they're here to destroy you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So my love for those tropes made me kind of like want to, I ended up building that in Spectres, in that like you get to know your characters before they have to fight each other. As they're young teenagers, trainee pilots in an academy of some sort, getting to know each other, making friends or enemies. And that whole period, like the academy phase, it's like an extended character creation. Because like the other thing that I wanted to do was that you start off with a pretty blank character and you fill out their traits as you play that first phase.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I realized when I've been playing a lot of like story games or even just like one shots of like other RPGs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you create a character and you have these ideas of like what this character does or would do. And then you play the character and then you realize, oh no, this is not the person at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right, like you realize that the stuff that you wrote down just doesn't make sense for like how you ended up playing this character. You find the character through play, right? Sometimes through like a very ridiculous thing, like maybe you know, it's like the joke about like, you know, hey, this guy said gravy in the group chat, right? And then now you're just Gravy Boy. Right? Like, you get it. It's like sometimes when you play a character in a game, they do one thing and then that's now your character and you never anticipated that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So because of that, I wanted the academy phase to kind of reflect that, so that you start with the bare bones. You just have one trait for your character and one relationship, right? And then you fill out the rest of your traits as you play. And the original version of the game used tokens. And this was actually before I ever played like Dream Apart or Dream, was it Dream? No, the Dream Askew. Dream Askew was the first of the two. So before I played Dream Askew, I played another game called On Mighty Wheels by Melody Watson. And that used a pseudo like token. Like it used the token, right? Like to move the spotlight around. Like the concept of the game is really cool, in that like you are actually kind of like a pub, a street, not a street, like a public theater troupe, or a folk theater troupe, like recreating or retelling like parts of the Russian Revolution, the revolutions. I can't remember.
Like a specific Greek chorus.
October
thing?
Revolution. Yeah, yeah. So you are actually replaying parts of the, you are playing as though there are actors putting on a play, retelling parts of like what happened during the revolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you use the token to kind of like move the spotlight around to like, oh, this person is like currently addressing the audience, right? Or this person is like the spotlight character during this part of the play, so to speak, right? Mm. And that was super helpful, right? In the original version of Spectres, like I used the token more to like it was definitely more like combat focused rather than like character focused. It was like, hey, you know, create your characters and then based on like what cool mechs you come up with, like try and win a war, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to use the token was more like an advantage token to like see who had the kind of like advantage in a scene. And then after that, I played Dream Askew and then realized that, oh, like, you know, there's other ways to use tokens as well, right? So I had tokens in there and a sort of like strong move, weak move kind of system where like you gain tokens when you do something that reveals like a weakness or shows how your trait can lead to like bad situations. And then you spend the token to show how your trait can be seen in a positive light, right? And that's how you kind of like play your character out. I didn't realize I wanted something that would be able to tie the two phases together, because after that you will have a time skip to the conflict phase where you now get scattered to the winds and might end up on opposite sides of a war, and you might have to, you're now ace pilots and you have to fight each other. But I wanted something to be able to remind you of what happened in the academy phase. And one of the reasons for that as well is I realized like early on in designing the game, I hoped that, you know, it could be played in a single session, but I realized like it was a lot more comfortable when the game was played in two sessions. right? So you do one session that's the academy phase, and then the next session is the conflict phase. That gives you more time to like explore different things in the academy phase, build out the world, build out the character relationships, gives you a bit more time to do that. And then you have a clear break point where you have to advance time anyways. Mm-hmm. So it became very common to like, oh, let's just playtest the first, the academy phase, and then we'll come back another time and we'll playtest the conflict phase.
Nice.
And because of that, I wanted a way to kind of like keep the, like remind you of things that happened in the academy phase. And one of the ways I found to do that was to, instead of just using tokens, was to use words, capital W words, which kind of came from the aspects in Fate. Right. Mm-hmm. So in Fate, like you create aspects that there's part of your characters as well. And I thought of like having tags as like things that you could gain and spend. Right. Mm-hmm. In a way, I wanted tokens with memory, right? Tokens that could remember when they had been gained and when they had been spent. And like that was something that came up. Not often, but like sometimes it's like very cool. Like there was one game where like pancakes came up as part of the academy phase, and like it's weird to have pancakes in just in the word bank, like to be able to be used and spent. And then when you have pancakes in the conflict phase, right? Why you remember that, like, oh, we used to be friends and like made pancakes together, you know?
Mm-hmm. And when you little scene across the table, just putting maple syrup in the other one's mouth.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe you spend the word pancake in the conflict phase to like.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff: shirts and polos, activewear, and fine leather goods, all at 50% to 80% less than other high end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Like flatten someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you deploy a gravitational cannon and like just like flatten them to the ground and pancake them. Right. Like you can take one word and see them in different contexts across the academy and conflict phase. So that was a cool thing that like served a few different purposes, and so that's the game. That's a long-winded. That's a pretty long-winded like, explanation of what it is, but like that's how it got to where it got to like right now, which is it's a sort of belonging outside belonging game about like teenagers getting to know each other, developing as people, forming relationships, and then you fast forward and like put those to the test and like potentially have to kill each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because you said the first version of this was a little bit more. There's a couple things I want to touch on here, but the first one that comes to mind is, you said this originally is like a combat sort of driven game, win a war, right? But that's not necessarily what the war story, like the war genre, is about. Especially correct. When you like akin them to space operas and stuff like that as well. Like it's the drama, it's character driven, it's about developing and losing relationships. Like the one that comes to mind the most is the Gundam Wing series. When it gets to Endless Waltz, I'm pretty sure that is his name, Wu Fei.
Yep.
I think Wu Fei plays for the other side at some point in Endless
Wu
Waltz.
Wu Fei, the stupidest boy to ever pilot.
Yeah, the stupidest boy. Fucking, I don't give a shit. You're just a woman. All right, we need to. The 90s were not a great time for misogyny. You know, Christ. But yeah, that's one of the few examples I can think of. I think Troa Barton also like switches sides mid series. Mm-hmm. Like I think the Gundam Wing pilots fight each other for like 2 to 4 episodes, if I remember correctly. Yep. Cause they're like, I want to help. And they're like, I don't want you to help cause you ruined the mission. Fucking Hiro Yui, dude, one track mind. But, and then, you know, G Gundam, which is very super robot, but you know, there's a version of Spectres of Brocken where you could play to like win people back to your side or the play on the same side or whatever have you, right? It starts out as a competition. They just form like a team battle gang. But the big mechanical thing that I wanted to point out that I really loved is the Academy phase specifically, because I do think there is a missed opportunity in more epic fantasy trad games, and I'm talking about like to the mainstay players again, of like you said, in a vacuum or even at the table, you sort of like collaborate together. You talk about like, oh, we do X and Y. There's actually a really interesting round table for Critical Role. They had finished up the Exandria Unlimited Calamity series that Brennan Lee Mulligan ran. And when he was talking about how he developed characters for that show, for that miniseries, they spent like days on character creation. And Brennan says he comes to the table with like 30% of the world drafted out and no narrative. He doesn't decide what the narrative is until he hits the table with the players. And he generally just asks them like, what do you want to do? Because if you tell me what you want to do, it saves me time on prep. And it makes sure that everyone's bought in and I have no problem like finding the Venn diagram of this thing as we're all talking about it. I think what's missed in sort of like those trad sessions without the experience of like other games or thinking about like how to tease out a background or to like foster relationships between players. Because you're right. The one thing you point out that made me think about this is a lot of the time someone will create a character in a vacuum, hit the table, and then when push comes to shove, they often will not make the decision they thought their character would make. Like, I think there's this thing where they think the avatar will take on a life of its own and they will embody that avatar. But really, you know, those characters are a reflection or a shadow or whatever metaphor you want to use of ourselves. And our own sensitivities are going to be placed on that character, whether we like it or not. That's the role play of it. You'll fall out of character. You'll fall into character. You'll be like, ooh, that makes me uncomfortable. And you're like, yeah, let's dive into that. But you won't know that until the situation comes. It's very trial by fire. So I love just alone, like the value in Spectres of Brocken is in its Academy phase for me, because it showcases that I think there needs to be some like, a little more than just like questionnaire survey things. Like I know there are some games that sort of do this, but they do it just like as like fill in the blank questions of like, you know, what, you know, Dungeon World is a good example of this. You know, which one of these characters do you not like their magical teachings or something like that? But what happens, I think that becomes a little bit stronger when you like play that out, when you look at that problem, be like, okay, let's figure out like why that is the way that it is. I think the why is missing a lot of the time. A lot of people will like put the what without the why. And I think the Academy phase is very cool for that.
Yeah, I actually credit this a lot to Dream Askew as well, because one of the things that I remember the advice from the book was like, oh, don't feel like you need to fill out everything in the sheet before you start playing, right? Jump into play, like you are already playing when you're imagining like different versions of the character as you're like trying to like pin them down onto paper, right? Mm-hmm. So like that was like very helpful in like in like thinking about like, oh yeah, actually, right? Like that reminded me a lot of like the situations you talk about where like, you know, I on the fly change my character. So why bother writing it down in the first place? Here are all the options, right, on the Dream Askew playbook. I can circle them whenever I like. I don't have to circle them now. You know, mm-hmm. I can circle mm-hmm. them when we play. Leave it in limbo, you know?
Yeah, that's the other thing too, is like the small teaching of like, you have to have the character ready to run when you get to the table, but that couldn't be further from the case, right? Like, as long as they got arms and legs and they know how to like do the thing the game asks them to do, all the trait stuff can be just written in as you go. They're like free form clay that just needs to be molded by conflict or emotional events.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is dynamics, right? Like the most exciting thing about playing role-playing games is playing with other people and seeing how you bounce off each other, and like, you know, you sometimes when you do group character creation, right, it's like, oh, this could be how our dynamic plays out, right? And then you realize a thing that you didn't think of happens, and it's like, oh, our characters actually responded to that differently, and like the way we thought our characters would end up having this relationship changed because of how we responded to this event. Right? It's like, and so it's leaving space for those dynamics to kind of like happen and build up the character from that. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. And yeah, it's even the thing of like, there's also the danger in like hard coding your characters to be a certain way or do certain things. And then when push comes to shove, you feel like you're making a suboptimal choice in some ways. I know suboptimal kind of plays a little bit more into mechanics, but I'm the person who thinks suboptimal is also a narrative word. But, you know, you have this juxtaposition of like, oh, I said that my character wasn't afraid of spiders, so does that mean I fight the giant spider or I run away? Because the giant spider's CR is much higher than mine. You know what I mean? Like, there's like a lot of things that you're thinking about depending on what the game asks you to think about when it comes to conflict. And if you have something set in stone, you can feel this sort of like friction against the game where it's like, well, I don't want to act this way, but I also don't want to act like the character way. Or there's a phrasing of that I meant to say. That doesn't quite make sense. Your character wants... Yeah, there is a friction between how your character wants to do something and how you want to do something. And you have to find out like where that give and take is.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I really liked about Spectres of Brocken from what we've mentioned so far is the words as tokens is very cool because it allows you the space to be constantly inspired at any given second, right? If you have just like a little disc in front of you, that's a token. And then you have like a list of moves in front of you. You know, there's potential for decision paralysis or constant conversation around how the move happens. But if you're sort of limited by not necessarily limited, but inspired by the words that are available to you on your character sheet that are the quote unquote currency or resource that you spend, it's almost like they are powering the move, right? Pancake earlier powers the next move you're going to make. And you can sort of like use your creativity to express the different forms Pancake can take when it comes to the English language specifically. I'm sure it has different connotations in different languages. And I don't just mean the word pancake. I just mean like the context around certain words, but it's very cool. And you can engage with that in any intensity that you want as well. Like you can either be inspired by the word or you could just spend it as a token. I can see a version of this where I'm like, you know what? I don't really want to think about how Pancake does this. I just want to like seize the moment, right? Mm-hmm. Like I just want to use the word and I don't have a more grandiose use for it.
Yeah, it's been very like funny, like the exactly what you're saying in the sense that like that it comes with a restriction, right? And that like sometimes people feel like, oh, you know, I have to figure out a way to use the word, and like I don't really care, but like I want the possibility to be there.
Yeah,
right. Like so, if you use it for inspiration, and when it happens, it's like magic, you know? Like
yeah.
like it's. The feeling you get when like you figure out a way to like make it relevant, like mm-hmm. feels like serendipity, feels like fate, feels like magic.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. So that's been a really tricky part of like trying to like explain it to people or like write it into the rules, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, here's a rule, but like feel free to ignore it when it doesn't make sense. Yeah. You don't have to do it.
Yeah, I totally understand that in a lot of ways. Yeah, and playtesting for this has been successful so far. Like, you know, I've been a part of a playtest that was a lot of fun. I created Edgelord Warping Gundam, which was very indulgent. Tried to murder another friend because, you know, I was Hero Yui in that moment. It's all about the mission. But yeah, how is, you know, you're coming to a potential Kickstarter with this soon. Mm-hmm. You're continuing to play test it. You run your own sort of like, what's the word? Play test, right? Like regular play tests in a space, which
yeah.
people, if you live in a time zone or have a schedule that affords you to be awake during those times, go do the session zero. It's sick. It's fucking sick.
Yeah. So I'll play. Playtest Zero is the we run in the Session Zero Discord. We kind of like hermit crabbed our way in there. In that, like, you know, like I met so the one of the other guys who like started this session, this playtesting meetup is Thomas Manuel, who runs the Indie Art newsletter as well. It's a great
shout out, Thomas.
You should subscribe. Yeah. So we met during Session Zero, right? Which was the convention that happened in like early the online version of that convention that happened in early 2021. Yeah, on Gather, that was fun.
Gather, the next Discord, just saying.
Yeah. And we hit it off, we played some games, and like then we realized like, oh man, it would be cool to be able to like, you know, play test more regularly, right? And Thomas was kind of like the impetus behind that. And we ended up deciding to just go with it, because I used to run a board game playtest meetup back in Melbourne as well. Mm-hmm. And I ran that for 5 years.
Whoa.
Maybe?
Sick.
And that was also like a weird one where like the people who started it couldn't be regulars anymore. So I ended up being the guy who was regular and like just took over after that. So I've experience in like, you know, just making sure these things happen, right? Like have mm-hmm. a regular schedule, make sure at least like two or three people turn up. And even if there isn't anything to playtest, do something together so that there is a, there's an appointment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like so if people take it for granted, it will happen, right? Every other week, every other Tuesday, Playtest Zero happens. I don't think we've missed a fortnight that we didn't plan for, right? I think we took a break over the like December, mm-hmm. since a lot of people were on holidays or like just needed a break because like they're spending time with family or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's normal. Like the other thing about running like good consistent events is to build in break times and build in very clear break times that you are for sure coming back from. So because like I've had experience running those playtests, like that playtesting meetup, and also when Incubator, which was the thing that I ran when I moved back to Malaysia, and then the whole pandemic happened, I was still like playtesting with them because they transitioned online, and also learning from like, so I handed it over to someone else, right, like to run since mm-hmm. I left the country. So my friend was running that, and like he had a very good way of like running online sessions. So I learned from his example as well mm-hmm. to try and like make sure Playtest Zero like runs smoothly. So it's been really good to just have a regular outlet to playtest things. Just like I believe strongly in playtesting. Not in the sense that like if you don't playtest a game, it's not a real game. It's more like no playtesting. Like someone had mentioned that playtesting is playing, right? It is an enjoyable mm-hmm. a thing to do, right? And like, I also enjoy it when games are quote unquote bad. And I really, really love like playtesting, or I think the other term that we've thrown about is playstorming, right? Like early stage playtests of games where you just have the seed of an idea and you're trying to figure something out. Back when we did Incubator, one of the cool things was just like people would just bring like blank like paper and like start writing on them, like when when we used to be able to meet in person, you could see someone like just feverishly like writing on cards like before the playtest start. Yeah. And like, oh yeah, this is like, I had an idea. I don't have a proper prototype, but I just want to test this out, right? Like, does this mechanic even work? And like, if it works, great. I'll go and develop it. If it doesn't, that's cool. Then I'll discuss it with other people who are also into like games and like playtesting games, and we can like see whether it's worth pursuing further, or I'll just work on something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that kind of early stage playtesting, and so we want to make sure that Playtest Zero was also amenable to that. So it wasn't just people bringing finished games to playtest. So we put a time limit and try to cultivate a expectation that like, hey, you don't have to bring finished games here, right? You can just bring the seed of an idea. And one of the things that helps with that is to make sure that people who are regulars model that behavior for people who aren't, right?
Yeah.
So make sure that like, hey, I don't just bring like ready stuff. I bring like the crap as well, right? Like once in a while, I will bring nothing, right? When I say nothing, it means like
literally nothing.
Yeah. Well, I haven't brought nothing before, but like I brought stuff that's like really, really not ready, right? And it's like, oh, yeah. Okay, we'll play two rounds, and like, okay, it's fine, but like, you know, we can stop it there.
I've seen enough.
Yeah. So that's been really good, and I guess this is one of the reasons why like being able to chunk out like a part of a game to playtest at Playtest Zero was also helpful for like development of Spectres, in that like I don't have to run a full like 3-4 hour playtest, especially when you know you can like chunk out and like say, okay, like let's just like nail like the academy phase, right? And next week we could do the conflict phase, right? There's another game that I've been playtesting, and we've just been reusing characters from every playtest, so it's just the same characters every time, so it's been fun to see like them change. You can do stuff like that in like when you have a regular playtesting group. So I'm a big advocate for playtesting, not because the games are the purpose, but playtesting is the purpose of playtesting. It's a very I don't know if I explained that correctly. I think playtesting is fun. Right. I know some people like think of playtesting as like a burden, or like a thing that's not fun. No. Fixing your game after a playtest, that's the boring, that's the not boring, that's the difficult part. Playtesting itself, fucking fun. Right?
Yeah.
It's the best thing in the world to like bring a game and like play it. And play it with other people who are interested in like designing games as well, and have good insights and strong opinions about games, and you are able to like learn from each other. And like sometimes the best playtest sessions is when I playtest someone else's game and gain insight from it. Right. I learn so much from playtesting other people's games, seeing what kinds of things they test, how they think of like problems and like potential solutions to them, how they discuss their goals for games. It is like getting a consistent, like you build each other up, you know, like everyone kind of like grows together if you can have a consistent playtest group. To be able to like just play each other's games, give feedback. Like I really enjoy it. Like, you know, like even from board game days, like even though I never got like a published game out of it, I still loved playtesting all 5 years of Incubator. Yeah. Like I'm excited every time we get to playtest something, right?
Damn. I gotta stay up. Gotta stay up for one, maybe two.
You know, you should start something, Jeremy.
Listen. I'm working on it. It's coming.
It's a lot of work. Sure. I won't pretend it's not. Yeah, it is a lot of work.
To get everyone to come and consistently come and figure out how to make that all happen is a trial by fire for sure.
American adults are so busy. Not to say that any other country's adults are busy, but most of my circle is American adults, and I just cannot get them to the same place at the same time. I just cannot.
The trick is you need two other people. I think the best is three, yeah. Right? Yeah. As long as you have three people who are able to like make a thing happen regularly, that's mm-hmm. all you need.
Yeah. Yeah. I need some Astral Umbral playtest for sure. Gotta make it mm-hmm. happen. I had some recently. I agree with you. Playtesting is wicked fun, and it teaches you so much more like in action than you could ever do in a vacuum by yourself. I think it's really valuable in a lot of ways. I used to be on the crowd that subscribed to you have to playtest a game to get a game out there, mm-hmm. but also like getting your vacuum writing into public hands is another that's a step of playtesting that often comes later. Like you have your private pre-alpha group, and then you send out your alpha, and then people you don't see are giving you feedback, and that's also playtesting. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to do like play test before release. People do release, then have other people give feedback all the time. But I do think there is something about being there for some of the first play test sets that really can polish things in a way. Cause you know, when I did my play test, I think like 2 weeks ago, I wrote I didn't have to be a player in the game, which was huge. It's also the way I designed the game. But being able to like sit there, listen and watch people like have friction with stuff or find enjoyment in other things, I was able to take personal notes for myself, like give myself feedback, which I could not have done if I didn't see it being played. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is amazing.
Yeah.
If anyone runs a Discord server, try to start a playtest thing. If you're in game, I think it's valuable. I think it's valuable not only as like a way to test your designs, but also community building. I think that's also like a really big part of it is to get people regularly connected about fucking around with games.
Yeah. Yeah.
And teaching that doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah. One way you can do that is like the format that we have for Playtest Zero is a very specific format. So not all games are able to be playtested in that format because we try and limit each playtest session to about an hour. We break that sometimes because like, hey, if tonight only one person has a game that they want to play test, sure, we'll play for 2 hours, right? Like it's a soft rule, but like we try to have that as a guideline, right? Because that just makes sure that like people know that like, hey, it doesn't have to be a whole thing, right? You can just play test a bit. And that's very good for getting regularity, but it's not great for when you need to explore particular things with a game, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, like the format we have serves our purpose, but like it doesn't serve all playtest purposes. So, you know, like if all you can do is just have like multiple long playtests or like, you know, like a campaign playtest, right? Which I will have to do at some point for some of my other games. Yeah, that's you'll need different playtest formats, but you know, playtesting is still fun.
Yeah. Playtest is play. As mm-hmm. Aaron said. So we're coming up to the top of the show here. And, you know, I wanted to, you know, people always remember the beginning and the end of anything. So, Aaron, would you just give yourself a quick sign off and also sort of mention the target dates for the potential Kickstarter for Spectres of Brocken and that you're also doing some streams. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, hit us with that.
Yeah, so you can find me online at Aaron Lime, EHRONLIME on Twitter, and that's also on my itch page. So it's aaronlime.itch.io. So that's one of the easiest way you can keep up on my stuff. I also have a newsletter, which is at perfect-whole.ghost.io, G-H-O-S-T, ghost.io. That is probably the best way to like get like specific like news updates on that. Mm-hmm. I have been sharing like some work in progress for like other like projects that I'm working on as well. And Spectres of Brocken itself, it will come to Kickstarter in September. Tentatively, I have it penciled in for the 13th of September. But if there's any changes, if you know, like if there's any issues, any changes, I will announce that through the newsletter or on social media. So if you follow on those or follow the campaign, go to kickstarter.com. You can find the link that there's a button to like follow the campaign when it launches. So check those out. Yeah, that's me.
And also, if people want to go join the Playtest Zero, head to the Session Zero Discord server. Although I don't know if they have like a thing you have to fill out first.
No, so so we don't have the link public because, like I said, we hermit crabbed our way into the Session Zero server. Like, that server was made for the Session Zero online event back in 2021, mm-hmm. and we've just kept using it, and the mods have been nice enough to like, oh, just you know, be nice, and you can keep using the space. It's helpful. So we're trying not to like make it a big thing.
Oh,
so
if you want, if, okay.
No. But if you want to join, like, just send me a DM. I'll DM you an invite. We just don't want like annual random to walk in,
sure.
with a public invite, just to keep things like easy. So just make sure,
kosher, yeah.
You know, hey, if you're actually interested in like coming to the playtest, then hit us up. We can hook you up with an invite, but we're not gonna like leave it public and have to deal with like bots and spam, yeah. and stuff like that, because there isn't a proper like, yeah, there's the mods are still there, but like, you know, it's not we just do it every other week, right? So
got it track.
Respectful of that I'm not giving them extra work, so we try to keep the invite link not public.
Great Yeah, you heard it here. Message Aaron or start a thing in your own server.
Yeah Definitely. Like, we have two, we just started a new time slot that's friendly to US West Coast, just because there were people in the server already who were interested in that. So we started that. So we have a Southeast Asia friendly time zone, which is on Tuesdays, and the West Coast, US West Coast friendly time zone, time slot on Thursdays. So that's been happening. Unfortunately, it's West Coast, not East Coast, Jeremy. So.
Yeah, I get it. For you. It's fine. I know where I stand. I'll figure it out. Jesus, 11 for me.
Look, if there are more people who are interested in and yeah. are in that time zone,
I'll run it.
You know, if we have enough people, yeah, and we can regularly get like 3 people to do that, I'm happy to start another time slot. Right, but
right.
just gonna make sure that we have the people to keep that happening regularly.
Yeah, I'll run it. I'll do it. Well, Aaron, I know that it is late there, and, you know, look out for Spectres of Brocken. This should be coming up just before the streams go live or around that time as a little bit of a pre-teaser for all the events to come for that in the next month. So thank you, Aaron, for being here, and thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us. I know I learned a lot from Aaron. I hope you did, too. And we will catch you next time. Say bye to everyone, Aaron.
Bye.
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 Hey there, listeners. Thank you very much for taking the time to sit down and hang out with Aaron and I again. We really appreciate it. You can find links and resources down below in the show notes for getting in touch with Aaron and other content with similar topics. Support Jeremy and the DYD podcast by reviewing the show or joining the community Discord server. Thanks again for listening, and remember that design is a marathon, so enjoy the journey and have a great day.